Okay, so we're continuing in our series on James, the letter of James, which is all about genuine, authentic religion, faith, and wisdom. Last time, when we started the book, we looked at the joy of trials. Trials themselves aren't very joyful, are they? But we can feel joy during trials because of what they produce. Perseverance, maturity, completeness. That's what we looked at last time. This time, we're looking at the temptation of trials in verses 13 through 18. Because James tells us, he's in this passage, he's carrying on talking about trials. And he tells us that trials, yes, they can be a source of joy, but also they can be a source of temptation. They can pull us into sin. So that's what we're going to be thinking about this morning. James starts like this. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. So what James is saying is every trial is a temptation. Because trials can put pressure on us. Trials put stress on us. And what they can do is they can cause us to abandon God and abandon trusting in him and abandon persevering, and we just walk into sin instead. Now, to understand this verse better, we can insert these italics. If you look at the screen, hopefully that makes it a bit more clear what James is saying, his progression from talking about the joy of trials to the temptation of trials. He's saying, when we are tempted to sin because of trials, no one should say, God is tempting me. James really understands that when trials come into our lives, they are a temptation to sin. They are a temptation to abandon God and fall into sin, because that's just far easier than persevering, because trials are difficult, aren't they? There's no way around that. If we're struggling because we're going through something difficult, something painful, some stress at work maybe, difficulty in a relationship with our families, with our friends, we can sometimes just reach out for something sinful just to ease the pressure a bit. Because we feel we can't get any joy in life. We can't get any happiness. So we just need this sinful thing to make ourselves feel a bit better. Even though, like the chocolate bar that Nicola offered, even though we know it's bad for us. That is a very strong temptation that we face when we're going through trials. So that's why James is addressing it now. Suppose I'm in a trial and I give up trying. I give up persevering, I listen to temptation, and I start sinning. Is that God's fault? We might think it is, because after all, God permitted the trial to come to us. But James says, no, God does not tempt us to sin by sending us trials. And he gives us two reasons. First of all, God cannot be tempted by evil. God is so holy that it's impossible for him to be enticed into somehow plotting to lead us into evil. God cannot be tempted by evil. And then secondly, God doesn't tempt anyone into sin. His holiness won't allow him to do that. He'll definitely test us by allowing us, as we saw last week, to go through trials in order to produce perseverance and maturity and completeness and so on. But he never tries to get anyone to sin. He never actively sends us evil and attempts to destroy our faith. So who does tempt us to sin during trials? Well, James tells us in the next verse, verse 14. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. We are tempted to sin. We are to blame when we fall into sin during a trial. It's our own evil desires that entice us into sin. It's our fault, not God's. James is wanting to make that clear. Our evil desires, that innate desire that we all have within us, in our heart, that innate tendency to sin, they drag us away and entice us into sin. And James, what he's doing here, he's using a fishing metaphor. You probably noticed that if you're into fishing, even if you didn't. So this word entice, it means in the Greek to lure, to bait. You know, it's like those things, those lures that fishermen use to try and catch fish. And then dragged away. That means literally to be drawn away, to be dragged forth. It's like when the fisherman pulls the fish, hauls it out of the water, drags it away into its net. And then desire is like the hook, which has the bait attached. And if you're into fishing, I used to be into fishing. Fishing hooks have barbs on them, and that's so they stick into the mouth of the fish and don't come out, so that the fisherman can drag the fish out through the water into the net. And James is saying this is how temptation and sin work. We get enticed by the lure or the bait. Sin is colourful and exciting and glittering and attractive. Like those colourful fish there. To a fish they look, ooh, they look tasty. That's how sin looks to us. And they look pretty real. And the fish wants them because they think they're real. And to us, sin looks like it really satisfies and it really will make us happy. So our evil desires go after it and clamp onto it. And then we're hooked and dragged away into sin and the subsequent pain and shame and regret and guilt and harm. And most of all, we're dragged away from God. Have you ever experienced that kind of pattern in your life? I know I certainly have. We're tired from this trial that we're going through. It's wearing us down. We're tired out from trying to persevere. We don't really see any joy in the trial. And we catch sight of a glittering lure. It's so attractive to us. It offers and promises so much. And our desire wants it. Alcohol, porn, gossip, revenge, something that's going to make us feel better. And so we go after it like a fish darting after that lure in the water. But then something awful happens, and James tells us what happens next. But before we move on to that, stewards, there's someone at the door, if you just want to let someone in. Before we go on to that, you may be thinking, I just want to give a quick explanation, because maybe you're thinking, hang on a minute, James has said it's our own desires that tempt us, but what about Satan? Where does he come into it? Because surely Satan tempts us to sin. Well, he does, very much so. But James doesn't mention him at this point because he mentions him later on. I think it's chapter 4 he mentions him. And James's purpose here is to highlight our own responsibility for sin. So that's just why he doesn't mention Satan. So what happens then when our evil desires hook us onto sin? Well, James tells us in the next verse, and he switches metaphors. So he's gone from fishing to childbirth here. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. So you've got this horrible family here, these three generations. The mother is evil desire. The daughter is sin. The granddaughter is death. If we give in to our evil desires, that leads to sin. And James is saying that is really, really serious. Because sin, if left unchecked, if allowed to grow and grow and grow until it becomes full grown, it will eventually lead to death. Now, what does James mean here by death? Well, let me talk about death according to the Bible. In a general sense, sin means death for everyone. Okay, every human on the planet dies because of sin. No one escapes death, do they? Death comes because of sin. The Bible tells us that. But James isn't talking about that here. He's talking about a different kind of death. for the unbeliever, so somebody who's not a Christian, who hasn't trusted in Jesus, James is referring here to the second death. And that's described in Revelation chapter 20 and 21. And the second death is a lost eternity. It's punishment. It's being separated from God forever after we die. Everyone dies the first death, but unbelievers die the second death. And that's that separated eternity from God. Now, for the believer, for the Christian, someone who has trusted and is trusting Jesus, Revelation chapter 2 verse 11 tells us that we won't be hurt by the second death because we share in Christ's victory over it. However, for the believer, if we allow a sin to grow and grow and grow until it becomes full grown, a little bit of our desire for God dies. So there is that kind of sense of death for the believer as well. Not the second death, not the internal separation from God, but a little bit of our desire for God just dies away. And the message, therefore, is sin is really, really serious. This is totally opposite to the world, the non-Christian world. The world says, oh, there's nothing wrong with a bit of sin, just a bit of fun. Just indulge yourself, just be naughty, you know. But James says, no, sin gives birth to death if it's allowed to become full grown. And that bit is important. Because if we ignore sin and we don't deal with it and we allow it to become full grown, then it will bring us death. So therefore the message is, don't ignore sin. Deal with it before it's fully grown. So I want to say to you, if you're not a Christian, right here, right now, don't ignore your sin. Don't be fooled and deceived into thinking it's fine, sin doesn't matter. Don't ignore it, because if you do, you'll kind of get used to it, used to living in it. It'll grow and grow and grow within you until one day it'll be too late and it will birth you into the second death. So deal with it now. How? By turning to Jesus. By repenting, by saying, I need you to forgive me for my sin. I need you to deliver me from my sin. I need you to save me from the second death that my sin is hurtling me towards. Don't ignore your sin. But the same applies to us if we're Christians. We too, we're tempted, we sin sometimes. We shouldn't ignore sin. We should not let it grow in our lives. James is saying, deal with it now. One Bible teacher says this: the time to deal with temptations, therefore, is in their beginnings. Desires and passions are like rust, which, left to itself, eats away unceasingly. The time to deal with rust is in its beginnings. And the same is true of temptations. They must be nipped in the bud if we are to overcome them. And that's so true. If you've got a car and just a little patch of rust appears, the thing to do is to not ignore that patch of rust. Because if you keep on ignoring it and keep on ignoring it and don't do anything about it, it'll end up like this car here, covered in rust. Rust needs to be dealt with, even a small patch of rust. And actually, it takes quite a lot of work to deal with rust. You have to sand all the rust away and then apply an anti-rust chemical and then put a rust protective on it and then put the primer back on, then put the paint back on. Or you ask a garage to do that. Whatever you do, it takes time, it takes effort, but it needs to be dealt with. And it's the same with us. If we don't deal with the sin that we've realised we're doing, if we just let it carry on and grow, it'll rust us away inside. So are you doing a sin right now and not taking any definitive action to stop it? Watch out. Every day it grows stronger, it'll cause you to weaken and it'll cause your desire for God to die just a little bit. So take action is the message. is the takeaway from today. Take action against your sin. Pray. Fast. Devise a plan if you're repeatedly falling into this sin. Ask someone you trust to pray with you and for you. Get advice from good Bible teachers, from wise Christians. Walk in step with the Spirit. Always do the next right thing. Just keep on doing the next right thing. Admit your weakness. Cry out to God for help. Do all those things if you sense that there's this sin in you that's just gradually growing, like a baby in the womb, just gradually growing. Don't let it become full grown. Don't ignore your sin. And if you're not a Christian, definitely don't ignore your sin. Turn to Jesus. He will deal with your sin, save you from the consequences of your sin, save you from that second death. James says in verse 16, don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. We can hear his pastoral heart here, can't we? His care for his people. He really loves them. He knows the damage that sin is going to do for them. He's saying, don't be deceived that God is tempting you to sin. Far from it, brothers and sisters. He's the source of every good gift, as he says in verse 17, the greatest of which is the new birth, as he says in verse 18. So James has talked about quite dark things, temptation, evil, sin, death. Verse 16, this verse, is a bridge to the opposite of those things. So I wonder whether you see the symmetry in the passage. Verses 13 to 15 are the opposite of verses 17 to 18, with verse 16 in the middle. Dark and light, death and life, evil and good, temptation and trust. There's these contrasts that James is making. And he's saying in the middle, don't be deceived and fall into one, move towards the other. And he's telling us, it goes on to tell us, that God does not send us evil. He sends us good gifts. We see that in verse 17. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. All goodness comes from God. Nothing evil comes from God. His gifts are perfect. They're not tainted with evil or selfishness or sin or anything like that. Even in our trials, God isn't tempting us to sin and trying to get us to do evil. The tough parts of life are intended to mature us and complete us and make us more like Jesus. God's intentions for us, even in trials, are always good. God does not actively send us evil, but he does permit us to go through difficult and painful things, like he did Job. His purposes, though, are good, and what the trials produce are good. It's interesting, isn't it, that James calls God the Father of the heavenly lights. He's drawing from Genesis, in the opening chapters of Genesis and creation here, where God made the sun and the moon and the stars and the planets and proclaimed them good. Why did he choose lights from all the things that God created? Why didn't he choose animals or plants? Well, it's because the literal light from celestial sources points to the spiritual light of God's nature or his character. We might say his moral light. As John says in 1 John 1:15, God is light and in him is no darkness at all. So when you next see the heavenly lights, you see the sun, a sunrise, a sunset, you look up maybe in the countryside where there's no street lights and you see the gazillion stars in the sky like on this picture. Or if maybe you see something interesting, like an eclipse or something, or if you're lucky enough to see the northern lights, let them point you to and remind you of God's goodness and of his nature as total, pure light. And the lights teach us something else about God as well. From our perspective, light is always changing, isn't it? The sun rises and it sets. The shadows lengthen and shorten. The moon waxes and wanes. On some nights, the stars seem brighter than on other nights. But God doesn't change. His light is always full. It's always constant. It's always pure. It's always bright. His goodness doesn't dim or brighten depending on our moral performance or depending on our circumstances. The changing lights that change every day contrast with the unchangeable goodness of God. And he won't ever change. He'll be good and good to us, his people, for all eternity. And James finishes off this section with the ultimate example of the goodness of God, new birth. Christians are born again. A person hears God's word of truth, the message of the gospel, receives it with joy, and then undergoes a spiritual rebirth, becomes a new person, a new creation. And that's all due to God's goodness in sending the word made flesh, Jesus Christ. And each Christian who is rebirthed is a first fruit. That is to say, a sign of more to come. More people experiencing God's goodness in the future and ultimately experiencing it eternally in the new creation. So I say to you as your pastor, my dear brothers and sisters, next time you doubt God's goodness, when you go through trials, and you struggle to feel his goodness, look up to the heavenly lights. Look in to your own rebirth. Look out to the trial that you're going through and trust that God is working through you to do something good in you. That he's building a good part in you by that trial, which will bring you closer to completeness. Look to God's goodness. Trust in it, even though it doesn't feel like it. Trust that he's working in you to do something good. That's how we get through trials. That's how we experience joy during trials, but that's how we avoid the temptation of trials. It's just to slip into sin and blame it all on God. So we've come to the end of the kind of first section of James, which is all on trials. We've looked at the joy and the temptation of trials. And I think it's been hard, actually, hasn't it? Because, well, trials are hard, and it's hard to find joy in them, and it's hard not to be tempted when we're under pressure. So I think it's important that we pause now. We just take some time to reflect and to allow the Spirit to minister to us. Callum's going to play just quietly in the background. And I want to say to you, if you're struggling right now, if you're going through a trial maybe, and you're struggling to see God's goodness, to find joy, if you're tempted to reach out to sin to make yourself feel better, use this time to pray, to reach out to God, to be filled with the Spirit, to cry out for help. I also invite you, if you need to come to the front, just to sit at the front during this time. If you feel you need to be ministered to, prayed over, if you need a hug or something like that, then if we see you come to the front, the prayer, the pastoral care team, the elders will come, one of us will join you and pray with you and for you if you need that. You can do that now, you can do that during the song that we sing, in a few moments' time. You can do that after the service. I'll make a circle of chairs down there. But I'm conscious, the elders reflected on this, we're conscious that we need this time. Trials are hard. Perhaps you're going through something difficult. It just feels too much. Perhaps you feel like you don't have the strength to carry on. Maybe you've fallen into sin. Come and be ministered to. Come and be prayed over. Come and receive the Spirit. Let's just have this time of reflection now, a couple of minutes, and we'll go into the song.